That's what our families appreciate more than anything. A lot of us think, I certainly thought that I could make up for my lack of presence by providing a solid, secure lifestyle. Nothing wrong with having nice things. That's okay. But if you're not present, then you're not giving your family what they really want.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe, Jim here. Looking forward to today's episode. We're having on David Phelps, and he is North America's leading authority in creating freedom for professional practice owners, dentists, doctors. He's become a good friend of mine. He's got an interesting background too. He owned and managed a private practice in dentistry for over 21 years. And when he was in dental school, he began doing his first real estate investments, doing a joint venture with his own father in 1980, and then sold the property, took the gains, and leveraged into 31 more properties that later produced a monthly cash flow that he could live off of and even allow him to sell his practice at a young age. He did go through some dark days, which we talk about. His daughter, Jenna, was diagnosed with leukemia at a very young age and had epilepsy, and then also finally led to a liver transplant. So you can imagine, as a dad, as a business owner, what he went through. And this is some of the bonding that David and I did. He made some really crucial decisions to leave his clinical practice so he could spend time with his daughter. He didn't know if he'd get 18 summers with her. He wanted to make sure whatever time he had, he would. And that helped lead him to a lot of his plan B. You know, once his daughter was through the battle and doing quite well and just about to leave the house, he started to help other people and became recognized as speaking on creating freedom, creating businesses and real estate investing for people, making more logical, rational, professional dreams come true and strategically manifest those dreams into more freedom for the people that he works with. And I've gotten to work with David personally, with his group. We've done real estate deals together. He really has become quite a good friend, and you're going to love his story. Looking forward to sharing today's episode with you. David, how you doing?
Jim and Jamie, I'm doing well. It's a pleasure to be with you both.
Yeah. Well, we've worked together now for a couple of years, done a lot of real estate deals together, and worked in family education together, cross-bridging 18 summers with your community. And we had a member of the first dinner we had, me, you, and Candace. It was that, well, we were introduced by good friends. And, you know, sometimes those dinners will last 50 minutes on the nose and you're out. I think we were there over 3 hours.
There a while, yes.
And we just sat there and talked about different values we shared and then different stories we shared. And I'd love to kind of introduce, you know, just tell the group a little bit about yourself. And then I wanted to really dive deep into some family challenges you and I shared and have overcome.
Sure. Well, I started out early in life. I think I had a lot of an entrepreneurial spirit within me. But I liked making money. I liked independence. I liked to buy the stuff that my parents wouldn't give me, and good for them because they didn't spoil us. If I wanted a better tennis racket or better shoes, or if I wanted that bike, I had to go out and earn it. So that was good early behavioral habits. But I kind of followed my father's footsteps into healthcare. He was a physician. I deviated slightly into dentistry, went down that road. But before I got my dental license, I was trying to figure out, again, kind of the David, how to be a good steward of money before I had any, as I talked my dad into co-investing with me in a rental property when I was in my first year of dental school. And he had to put up the finances, of course, because I had none. I had no credit, no ability. But of course, I had time and a desire to learn something. So he invested kind of with me, in me, and we bought this first property. And I carried it, meaning I managed it through dental school. And at the end of my graduation from dental school, since I was going to move out a bit and really couldn't stay, you know, hands-on managing the property, sold it, and we split about $50,000 in capital gain profit. And I thought, wow, you know, I worked a lot of nights and weekends waiting tables, which was a great gig for a student, did that in college and through dental school, and made some pretty good money. But I thought, wow, the amount of time I put into this property, just the acquisition, yes, there was some rehab, not heavy rehab to do. And of course, you know, learning to manage tenants and deal with the parts of underwriting them and just, you know, overall managing people, my first real foray into that arena. It was a great experience. I thought the time I invested in managing this property that my dad and I acquired together and the return I got on it was much greater than me waiting tables. And so I thought there's something here. And I want to stay with it. So I parlayed my capital gain profit into more properties, highly leveraged, because I had no real capital, no credit, but just learned the art of finding properties and negotiating with sellers who had motivations other than all cash sales, because I couldn't bring all cash. And just over time, I built up a pretty decent sized portfolio of houses that I was pretty much managing, but I learned to buy the right properties and the right tenants, and did that for a number of years. My wife and I, we were both, you know, in careers early on. So we did not start a family until we were in our mid 30s. So we had the stretch of, you know, career development. And of course I was doing this real estate on the side, and it was fine. It was fine for us. And then we had our first daughter, Jenna, when we were, like I said, we were in our mid 30s. And Jenna was a normal, happy, you know, rambunctious little kid until one day, in age 2 and a half, she was very lethargic. Just thought, well, she has some kind of virus or cold. It was in the winter, and mm-hmm. didn't think much of it. Mom took her to the pediatrician, and I got a call at the office. The pediatrician, sending us down to Children's Medical Center in Dallas, and he's not sure. And so I still have thought, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, it's all good. It's all good. This is the old David. It's okay. You know, and I get a call later in the afternoon. It's, she has leukemia. And I knew what leukemia was. I just, you know, hadn't dealt with anybody who had it. I knew it was cancer of the white blood cells. Still, you know, I'm still kind of in denial. And I even had a study club that night at the office, and, you know, I'm hosting. Well, this is, again, the old David. Well, I have to bear my responsibilities. I have to stay here. You know, I should have been, you know, at the hospital. But again, I'm still thinking, it's they misdiagnosed. It's going to be okay. I'll get down there and they'll say, oh, yeah, it's all good. Well, long story short, it wasn't. She had the real deal. She had leukemia and high risk. It was very tumultuous, to say the least. Anybody who's gone through anything themselves or with their family understand that it's hard. And unfortunately, our marriage didn't make it. Jenna did. Jenna made it through it. That was the blessing. We continued to co-parent, I think, extremely well over the next number of years. In fact, we still co-parent today. Jenna's not married, which is, you know, I still get to be dad to her, which is kind of cool. I want her to have that life and independence, but there's no rush on my part. So so we're good there. But what really turned things for me and Jim and Jamie was, you know, like I said, I kind of pushed through that time with leukemia, meaning that I felt like, well, I have to be the rock. I can't really show emotion. I've got to be the rock of the family. You know, in retrospect, totally wrong. I needed to be in there and be emotional, but I hid it. I covered it up. Like, I think a lot of men, we feel sometimes just an inner pressure to do that. Yep. So that wasn't a good move. But I will say that it was enough of a wake-up call that I really focused on the time that I got to spend with Jenna. So that focused time with her, when I had her for weekends or time, I didn't do anything else. In fact, I became the house where the other kids want to come to. Right? I love that. So I'm a single parent, but I'm doing everything the best I can and really focusing time on her. And we have some really great memories. Even though it wasn't under one roof with a mother and a father together, it's still, I think I got a lot of meaning and blessing out of that. She subsequently had epileptic seizures that were not well controlled for another 4 years after she survived leukemia. And then at age 12, this was some 18 years ago, at age 12, she was diagnosed with end-stage liver failure. And that was a result of a lot of the chemotherapy she had and a lot of the anti-seizure medication that was just too toxic for her liver. And it just destroyed, just ate up her liver over time. Unbeknownst to us, it was just, you know, again, out of the blue, another shocker. It's like, what next? And she was blessed to receive a transplant soon enough, because there's no dialysis like there is for kidneys. You can't kind of put this thing off. You either get a liver or you don't. I mean, the body's going downhill. So this is kind of like go time. And, you know, there's a whole point system, you know, and you have to be a certain category. It's, you know, it's, I understand how it has to be, but it's a very emotional time. And she was blessed to receive a liver from another child, probably in her same age range, that unfortunately met their demise in an automobile accident. And we're forever grateful for families like that girl's family who were proactive and donated organs. So I'm a big believer in organ donation, as you can imagine.
Yes.
Jenna received that liver. And it was when she was in the hospital recovering from this relatively horrific procedure. The liver is like, sits right in the middle of the abdomen, and it's connected to like everything. So you can just imagine like the most entangled plumbing, you know, if you can imagine, or maybe electrical, you look at an electrical box, you got wires going everywhere. Being neither one of those, it's just an entanglement to me, but somebody has to figure out how to remove the old and do it in such a way that they can put the new in and connect all the dots again. And it's a lot.
It is.
But I'm sitting in the hospital after the transplant. She's in the hospital for a number more weeks. It's, you don't just go in and get back out. It's, there's always some kind of complications. It's just part of it. And she's asleep most of the time and just breathing. And I'm just watching her breathe, just watching her inhale, her exhale, and really thinking, where do I need to be in terms of my family? Where do I really need to be? Yes, I'm supposed to be and had been the financial rock and doing that part very responsibly. But what did my family, what did Jenna really, really need from me? More money? You know, a college 401, or not a 401k, a 529 plan or something? No, she needed me.
Yeah.
And that's where I made the decision. I still remember today sitting there on those vinyl seats, you know, and kind of, you know, and you look across, and I know you've spent plenty of time with loved ones in hospital settings as well. And it just hit me that, you know, I need to make a decision here. And I decided there in the hospital, I'm going to sell my dental practice. I'm just going to sell it. Didn't have it all figured out, all planned out. Typical David would be, I've got to be very rational and logical here, and I need to get out spreadsheets. And nope, I decided none of that. I'll figure it out. I'll just figure this thing out. I didn't need a lot. And I realized the time with my daughter might be passing me by and I wouldn't get another chance. So I dedicated, so I got busy and sold the practice and I'm out. And that actually felt kind of good because I was really torn between my responsibilities and obligations, you know, in a dental practice where I need to be there for staff and for patients. And it, my daughter needed me too. And it's like, I'm torn because I'm a very responsible person. And I'm just trying to, you know, decide how do I do all of this? And I can't do it all. That's what I realized. I just can't do all of this. So I made a decision and left the practice, and Jenna survived.
What was that like, David, to leave the practice? Because obviously this event changed you.
Yeah.
And would you, looking 2020 hindsight, horribly like difficult, you know, and I dealt with it with my father, but he had a good life at that point. You know, Jenna's just getting started. So I give credit that your situation, I believe, was 10 times harder than mine, 10 times. But how did it change you? How do you think it changed you? Looking back now, do you think it made you a better person, a deeper rooted person, a less angry, more angry? You know, how did it change you?
Yeah, fortunately, I've never ingrained, you know, anger about life situations. I think I learned that from my father, a lot like your father, who was always very patient and just never showed deep anger. I just think I modeled after him. So I never let that pile up. Yes, certainly there's times when I've been angry, yes, and frustrated, more in frustration, but I learned not to hold on to that. So no anger, no frustration. I think it just helped me change my priorities and realize that this DNA and that, you know, was somehow incorporated in me. Again, nothing wrong with being responsible in life. That's good, responsibility. But I was so overdriven, I think, to accomplish and, quote, succeed by societal standards or whatever the industry said was, and be the best of the best. You know, there's just this drive to, I don't know, I'm trying to make people proud of me. Maybe it's my dad. Maybe there's something there. I haven't really figured out, but why that was, because no one was putting pressure on me. I think it was all self-imposed. And I think I had to really pull back and say, what is this about? And I use your calling so often today. I, of course, didn't have those words back then, but the 18 summers. Well, Jenna was in her 12th summer, and I might not get 18 summers with her. Maybe I'd get one more. I was at that point where it's like, I don't know. So what's more important, you know, to make more money and build more net worth, or is it to take the time that I've still got with her and devote it to her? And so it changed my priorities. It really reshaped me a lot in that regard.
And David, have you seen what's really interesting? I see it in our life all the time. When you change those priorities and you realize, oh, I need to give. Okay, so I'm going to settle for a little less money. I'm going to take some money off the table and really enjoy my daughter. But didn't the opposite of putting your money aside happen? Haven't you seen it exponentially grow because you tended that which matters most?
So much. And that's the message that I convey over and over again to people that come to our tribe at Freedom Founders. Again, just like me, just like you, just like all the entrepreneurs we know, hardworking, driven. And yes, when you are able to free yourself up and not worry about this, you know, how much is enough? Because if you think about how much is enough, it's never enough. There's never. So how much is enough just to live the life I want to at the particular time? Because there's always, God willing, there's always work that we can do. And that's what I said to myself. I can always go back and be a dentist. Even if I'm going to take off you know, a year here, a year and a half. See, I didn't know exactly. I knew I could always go back and be a dentist. That's the thing where it was, I wasn't burning bridges. I was going to say, I'm going to take that time off now. I don't care about the compound effect of the money I could be making. It could be, no, let's say I'm done with that. I want to compound the time. I want to compound the time I have right now because that's the most important. I can always go back to work and make money and invest in real estate. I felt like I had those skill sets, and unless those aren't taken away from me, unless my days are done here. And so I wasn't banking on that. I said, I can come back and do whatever I want to in time. In time. Time may not be there for my daughter, but I need to put the time where it was most important for me during those moments of crisis.
Yeah, and crisis really changes you. And I know you mentioned, you know, from this business focus and your priority focus shifted and spending more time with Jenna. And then you also mentioned, you know, thankfully Jenna made it, your marriage didn't make it. And now what are some lessons in maybe grieving, or, you know, everybody has a different relationship with what grief, mourning, fear looks like. And you mentioned before that you weren't really good maybe at sharing those feelings. And so is what have you brought differently into this lasting marriage that you learned about previously?
Just being more present. I think that's the big thing. It's so hard for entrepreneurs, again, with the responsibility and obligations we take on. It's so easy to not be present. It's so easy to, you know, leave the actual workspace or the workday or whatever it is, but still we're carrying it up here. Like, right, it's so easy to carry it. And learning to be okay with turning that off and saying, you know, whatever, you know, I'm done for the day. I've done all I'm going to do for today. I could let things based on today's events, tomorrow's events, what I'm predicting in the future. I could troubleshoot that and play all the schematics all day long, you know, and all night long if I let my brain work that way. And I had to learn just to give that up and say, look, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm not the best of anything, but I know that the resiliency that I have developed, that I can walk into situations and I'm going to come out okay. I don't need to put all this conscious time, brain power into this all the time. I can be present with my family, present with my wife. And that's what our families appreciate more than anything. I certainly thought that I could make up for my lack of presence by, you know, providing a solid, secure lifestyle. Well, a nice home and maybe a swimming pool in the backyard and some of those niceties. And that would make up for my lack of presence. And that's not it at all. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with having nice things. That's okay. But if you're not present, then you're not giving your family, your children, your spouse what they really, really want. If you really get in and ask them, you know, what would you want? I was speaking to one of my colleagues, my members, the other day, and one of the big ahas that he had was, again, same thing. He's working very hard. And I think it was his son, maybe 4 years old, and had the presence of mind to say, hey, Dad, could you ever make it home before the sun goes down so we could play ball? Bam, you know, smack. I mean, he said, wow, what a smack in the face. Because, you know, when I'm home, but it's, he wants me. He doesn't care about how much square footage we have or if we have the vacation home in the Bahamas. He just wants to play ball with me. Wow. How much extra money does that take?
Yeah, not much.
Well, we've even had that conversation when we met. We talk about this. We had a list, you know, he had this list that he created of what he was looking for. And I had a very short list, but my list included, I want something just for me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm, you know, as a wife, I'm no different than these children, you know, exactly what you're saying. Like, at the end of the day, I'm like, I just want it to be about me. And he'll say, well, just know, like, me working hard is for you. Me playing with the children is for you. Me doing, and I'm like, oh, no. Me right here. Yeah. I want it about me for right now for the moment. And so I think that exactly what you were saying, you're providing nice things and experiences, but so often those in front of you just want you.
Well, it's what we've taught. And you and I have talked about that, David, at Freedom Founders events. I call it either professional immunity or entrepreneurial immunity. We think, well, we're providing so much and we're doing this. And there is honor to that. There's importance. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it's not all the pieces to the puzzle. And that you should actually feel good about that, saying it's not just financial providing that they want. It's emotional. It's fun-loving providing they want just from you, not from anyone else in the world. And there's some real merit to that.
And I think oftentimes we need to be given permission or give permission to ourselves to do that. And I think the best way I have found it's through other people who set those examples, like you, who've gone through it and made the adjustments and set the priorities. And I can look at you, Jim and Jamie, as great role models of, you know, certainly entrepreneurial, your amazing family dynamics, and the fact that you focus, really, we talk more about family in 18 summers than we typically do about real estate. And I think that just says it right there, right? It's great to have the business in that aspect, but what really matters? And when I can see through your eyes, your experiences, what you're extolling to the world, and feel like, it's okay if I can be more like Jim Shields. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, he's showing me, I give myself permission. And I have to say thank you for that, because you two have been setting that example for years now. And it's a real mission. It really is. It's helping, I think, save a lot of entrepreneurs who otherwise have this guilt about, I got to be working,
No, and yet that's... Yeah,
thank you. That's a beautiful, that's and a you, sweet reflection.
David's done the same. You've done the same thing for the professional career. I have not seen, when it comes to doctors and dentists, more of a career where there is a certain badge of honor of long, 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 long hours. And it's almost an insult to not do that, if you're doing something wrong. And I've watched you, you know, let's talk a little bit about that, because you went from being a dentist to going through this huge family shift, and then began to help other dentists and doctors and professionals gain freedom financially and otherwise, the stuff, important stuff we're talking about. Like, how did that come about?
It's really interesting that it was the Christmas of 2010. And I know that because the summer of 2010, it was 6 years post-transplant, liver transplant for Jen. And she'd done pretty well. So, I mean, after the initial recovery in the hospital, things had started to settle out for her, and she was actually starting to thrive more. And she had a really bad rejection episode her 18th summer for her. Was her bad rejection. She was back in the hospital for over 60 days, going downhill. They're pumping her full of steroids, trying to reverse the body's rejection of this liver. They just were having a hard time trying to get control of it, and it was not looking good. And it was that summer that, for the first time, I heard her say, just take me home. Then she was old enough, she understood that things weren't looking good, and she didn't want to leave this earth, you know, in the hospital setting. God's grace, nothing miraculous, no new medicine. It was just, you know, brought her out of that slowly. So she, long story, she made it out. I actually got to walk her, escort her in her homecoming court that October. So a couple months later, her face is still puffy with steroids, but you know what? She was there. She was walking. It was like so good. And so Candace, her stepmom, my wife, she said, you know, we've been dealing with so much, you know, with changes in your practice and with Jenna's health. And she said, we really haven't communicated to any of our friends and family really what's been going on. And so we're really a lot of gratitude because Jenna recovered from this and seemingly was going to, you know, make it okay. So Candace wrote up a Christmas letter, and at the bottom, like a PS, it was like an, oh, by the way, you know, David sold his practice. Actually, the story, I sold the practice twice. So this was my second time at that. That's a whole other story for another day. I won't go down that rabbit hole. But he sold it finally sold it. And that little PS got not overwhelming response, but a handful of colleagues, some doctors, some dentists, you know, in the healthcare, just reached back out and said, hey, that's great that Jenna is recovered from that. So glad to hear that. And by the way, how did you manage to like leave, you know, dentistry? Because you're in your 40s and that financially doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah.
And that's where I let those few people know, well, I actually been investing in real estate on the side for, you know, at that point, you know, 20 years. And I said, it gave me a platform to segue. It said, you know, I wasn't done. I was going to still do something, but maybe go back to dentistry. But at least it gave me a segue where I could take some time off and devote to Jenna. And that's what really started what Freedom Founders is today. I had no vision for it. I just thought, well, yeah, how can I help some of these docs? And I said, well, I can teach you what I did, but what I started doing was back in my 20s. You're not going to want to do it the way I do it, because you've got a family now. You're busy. You're not going to, you don't have the time to do what I did. So I said, well, maybe you could just leverage off of the network I have and what I do. And so that's what we did with a handful. And I said, well, why don't I just, you know, teach you in a small group format? We can just kind of have a round table and just, this was just very fun. It was, you know, just fun. It's kind of like my private capital partners at that time coming out of the 2008 downturn. And there was a lot of properties to buy, as you remember. And, you know, I wasn't again trying to scale anything up. It's just like, well, this is kind of fun. I can do some things and help some other people. And then more people started saying, well, could you help me too? I thought, okay, I got to be careful here because I could get right back into some kind of a treadmill. And it's like, what do I really want to do now that I have some freedom? I thought, well, why don't I just bring in some of my friends that I've known through the years in real estate, and I'll be the translator. I'll connect the dots. I'll help them see how each other can help each other. And that's where it started. And then it just started to build from there. And, you know, we've just, you know, it's over time, it's built into a pretty strong community. And, but I still want to maintain the high caliber. The values are very important to me, as you know, and just, you know, the right people. And I love the fact that we have spousal partner involvement. We don't care that either spouse has to be dug into all the financial machinations. No, I don't care about that at all. I just care that they'll come to a meeting together, at least one meeting or to a blueprint day, and where we can really pull out the commonalities. Because just as Jamie, you said so well, there's things that we, the males, I'm speaking to us now, Jamie, you know this, is that we just overlook. Well, I'm working hard. I'm making the money. You know, what else could you want? You know, it's like,
we miss the big picture sometimes.
and when you have couples together, you know this, that's when the truth is spoken. All progress begins by telling the truth. So if just the guy shows up, and again, I'm being a little bit gender specific here, but if the guy shows up, it's all good. It's all good. It's all good. Right. If she's there, it's like, you better not say that because she's going to slap you silly because it's never all good. And so the truth comes out, but that's really healthy. It's healthy when you can be in a place where you can actually share at that level and not feel like anybody's judging you, pointing fingers at you. It's like, because Candace and I start out, you know, talking about our own situations and in the baggage and the things we've done wrong. I raise my hand super high and go, look, I'll tell you, I've done everything wrong. So let me be the first to go. And then now it's safe for the rest of you to actually express the things that maybe aren't working so well. Great. Let's acknowledge those. And then we can move forward with a game plan that can start to bring you together on the things that are important to you as a couple. And certainly you can have your individual desires and aspects in life, but we want the family unit to be strong and on the same page.
Yeah. And now, David, you're a master community builder professionally. And now what would you say maybe are a few top values or a few key components to building community that could translate into family life? I heard you say values. So I know in our home, a lot of our family culture and a lot is built on our values. And that's also those people in which we bring into our home and into our life. We share core values, even if yes, our walks of life are all different, but our values are the yes, same. And so I would just love some of your top components of a good community.
That's certainly high on the list is values. And I think we attract those kind of people because that's the way I speak. So people find us through different media channels, if you will, but that's the way I speak. And so we typically don't have people who don't come that don't have our values. It may not be the right time for them for other reasons, but values are huge. I think authenticity is also huge. You know, it's like strip your ego off when you come to Freedom Founders because we're all in this together and we're all helping each other. So that part of a community aspect is very, very important. And just for me, it's just making sure there's a good fit. That it goes on value and character, you know, how couples relate to each other. Again, I'm not looking for perfection because I certainly don't have that, but I'm just looking for the coachability, the willingness to pursue something besides the almighty dollar. Yes, we do focus a lot on the financial aspects of being good stewards of the blessings, the assets that we have, and maybe redesigning, redeploying those. But that's only a vehicle to buy back time, which time for me is the big one. So core values, authenticity, being coachable, transparency are key drivers. And I think that's what makes our community very strong. It's almost like the sitcom back in the 90s, Cheers. You know, you walk into the bar and everybody knows your name, right? That's what you want in a community. You don't want to feel like you're in a room of strangers. And, you know, people come to Freedom Founders for the first time and by noon the first day, you know, they just feel like they're welcome guests and they feel like they know everybody. That's the kind of presence I want. I don't want a room of strangers who are just there to, you know, get out their financial calculators. It's like, no, that's not what we do.
Yeah. So. And it sounds like you created that culture in your home when Jenna was younger and all the friends were wanting to come over.
Yeah.
I bet you knew their name and their stories and that they were welcome. And so I'm sure that culture is very similar in that home that I could picture that you were explaining earlier?
Well, relationships are everything. Right? I mean, at the end of the day, end of our day, whenever that is, I mean, Jim, you losing your father recently, and you know, I lost my father not too many years ago, and you know, just relational people, talking about just the memories and the people they've helped and who's helped them, and just those stories. Those are the real stories. So when I could see through the eyes and lens of those people who have gone before us, and realize what really was important. My grandfather, just same thing. Just stories about people, not about making money. Certainly providing security for your family. Yes, that responsibility. But, and I have to still, you know, bring myself back to that. I mean, I still have a tendency to, you know, I can go off a little bit. Sometimes I have to bring myself back. But I think being the fact that I have to be focused on walking the talk, you know, helps keep me in line. And, you know, Candace can be very good about, you know, if I start to deviate a little bit, she'll say, hey, you know what? Be careful what you're building or you're thinking you're building or whatever you think you need to do next. Make sure it's something you feel like you need to do. And for the right reason, for the right reason. If there's a right reason and you feel like in your heart, there's a reason to create something, build something, fine. But just understand, you know, that you're going to live with what you built. And are you doing it for the right reason, the right purpose in your life?
Yeah. I think you bring up a really important point, David. I think it was Napoleon Hill who said the most important member of your mastermind is your spouse. You know, and it's such a good decision. I know that I would be the decisions that I've made, like just a pulling in the reins of direction. Jamie's done for me so many times. So I think that, yeah. You know, I can't express that enough to people when you're saying, I want to get in a mastermind community and that. And the more that I've opened myself, because sometimes as a guy, oh, I got this, you know, I'll handle it. Don't you worry. We really fool ourselves. And, you know, I've learned, and I've said this openly, like, when I've been open to that synergy and that mastermind with Jamie, gosh, the stuff has been so much better, so much more meaningful, so much less drama or headache, you know, enjoyment. It's a really important thing. And I think that you and Candace definitely set that example.
Well, she has this sixth sense, this intuition. I'm sure Jamie has the same in so many ways, right? The things that just pass by us, just like, you know, like we had blinders on, right, Jim? And our spouses are so quick to see things, whether they be areas of caution, be careful, or I felt something over here that just the dynamic wasn't good. You know, it'll go by me. And when she brings it to my attention, I'll think through it and go, you're absolutely right. Thank you for pointing that out. And I can, you know, make a shift or whatever needs to happen there. Yes, it's just, you know, keeping us, you know, the guardrails on. I guess it's really guardrails, right? We want to do well. But we have blind spots. We all do, right? And we need someone to help us see what we can't see.
Yeah,
we do. And David, your next, because I know you talk about what's your next. Your next is that you started working on the next generation. And through Next Gen, sharing some of this wisdom that you've gained. Why do these young people need it sooner?
Well, I wish I would have had it sooner. And again, nothing negative about my upbringing at all. Great parents. But I think that today there's so much distortion in the messaging that young people are receiving. It's not accurate. It's not truthful. And I think if we want to have an impact on the direction of our country and going back to values, then a good place to put a lot of emphasis is with the younger generation, who many of them are confused, right? They're very confused in so many different ways. And I think there's frustration. They are in a position financially many times that is worse starting out of the gate with a lot of debt and sometimes degrees that don't make sense in this world today. And I think we really can have an impact there to help them see that there's different pathways to get to what's significant for them, and just helping them see through, again, through the eyes of others that have gone before them and are willing to share, you know, the lessons that we've all learned, right? That's the benefit of experience, good or bad, is so we can share the experiences and help others maybe not make as many missteps. There's always going to be some missteps in life, but to know that you have people around you that care about you and are there to help. I think it's one of the best things we can do as entrepreneurs is give back to the generations that are up and coming, hopefully for those that will listen. And there's always a time when people are ready to listen, not necessarily, you know, at the time we'd like to sell into them, right? Sometimes it's like, nope, I got this. Well, that's maybe not the day, but if you're there and you're an authentic and trusted listener, then hopefully we have that impact. And I think we have that opportunity to do that in many different venues today.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see you do it. I think it's going to add a whole new dimension to your what's next. I know it will. So I'm excited to see that happen for you.
Well, and you've been such a great collaborator in that regard, Jim. And again, that's really the biggest, largest focus of the conversations that we've had for the most part is been in that direction. And I love that. And you have experience and wisdom and connections, both of you do in areas that, so, you know, the collaborative opportunities that I think we have as capitalist entrepreneurs that can seed back into that generation, I think that it's huge. And I thank you for the contributions that you've made to me and to the people in our group.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. And we want to...
I just wish Jim would let me meet you sometime.
I know. He hasn't made the invitation. He has made that countless times.
And, you want to talk about you being in there in big moments of our life. So we were doing that whole project in Texas. And the night we were supposed to go up, our family dog passed away. That we had to do it by phone over.
I know.
The family was so sad. And I was like, I should cancel with these people. And then I'm glad I didn't, because you and Candace were so kind. And I knew then you guys were dog lovers. And then the second time we were going to come in and teach that whole date night to all the Freedom Founders. Right. And we got a fever the morning of. And we're like, mama can't leave with a 3-year-old with a fever. So but it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. So we'll make it happen.
Well, it's funny because when you did the intro, we've been friends for a long time. I was going to say it then, like, except I've never met this guy.
Yeah, well...
But I know, but in spirit we have.
Absolutely.
Messages back and forth. And so,
but I know you anyways,
Well, the finale question, David, I don't know, finale question. We started this a few years ago, right at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, the 21-year-old self, what would you tell your 21-year-old self? Great question, but been there, done that. 75-year-old self. We like to look to the bigger side and look back. So, you know, years down the road, 75-year-old David, what advice do you think you'd give to us today, or to any of us, to yourself and to all of us?
Experience, exposure to as many different people and opportunities as you can. Don't get trapped into a career path that's a kind of a grinder career path too early. I think we, again, going back to relationships, there's so much growth that happens when you associate yourself with other people and other people that bring other experiences, wisdom to us. And that's a big one for me. And I didn't do that early. I was one of those kind of a John Wayne rugged individualist, isolationist. I can do this myself. And some of the wake up calls, you know, from Jenna's situation opened me up to say, hey, I can't do this by myself. I'm foolish if I try to do this by myself. So I really think exposure to other people, learning from other people is being inquisitive and not worrying about everything going just right. Because, you know, just, and again, I guess being a dentist, you know, it's got to be just right. Well, okay, in the mouth, in the brain, the heart, you know, I mean, so, doing taxes or whatever, you know, there's detail that's important. But outside of that, not being afraid to try some things that maybe just don't work out. It's okay. And that's how we learn. That's how we evolve. That's how we grow. And I think I was hesitant to try a lot of things when I was younger because I was afraid of failing.
So true. I love it. Well, those are words of wisdom to end on, David. We'll have to have you on for another episode with Candace. And we do some couples once in a while.
That's absolutely
a fun one for synergy's sake. But
now, where can our listeners learn more about?
Yeah, let's let them learn about Freedom Founders and yourself.
Well, freedomfounders.com is the website. I have a podcast, which is the Dentist Freedom Blueprint Podcast, which you don't have to be a dentist to ascribe to that. We talk a lot about life and a lot of things we talk about here today. And I've got a few books I've published on subjects of more about freedom and some aspects of financial on Amazon. So those would be some good places.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your heart and your stories with us today. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. My pleasure as well.
Thanks, David.
Take care.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.